Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, June 18th. I'm Ray Graff. You know, one of the coolest guests we have on this program from time to time is Gail Sokol. And she's exceptionally cool today because she brought ice cream that she made herself. And then I got thinking, she has these beautiful cones. And I never thought about it. I thought cones just came out of a bag. But she baked these herself. And we'll talk about ice cream, making ice cream, and baking things. If you got a question about baking or whatever, Gail Sokol is the one. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again, 800-348-2551, Gail Sokol, and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Chef Gail Sokol. She is here with recipes and advice for both baking and for making ice cream at home. Chef educator Gail Sokol has been teaching children and adults about baking for over 20 years, beginning as an instructor at SUNY Schenectady in the culinary department, later at the Sage Colleges in the nutrition department. Chef Gail is the author of a professional textbook entitled About Professional Baking and a cookbook entitled Baking with Success. Chef Gail has her own podcast, Baking Radio. She also has a series of YouTube baking videos where she teaches globally on all topics baking. If you got a question for Chef Gail, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Gail Sokol, welcome back. Nice to see you here.
Oh, it's so nice to be back in the studio.
It really is great, and it's a sign of summer that we are finally bringing up a super topic, and that is ice cream.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, when I came in the studio, you had these cones out, and they're spectacular. And then I said, well, did you bring some boxed ice cream? And you said, no, I made the ice cream.
No way.
So let's start with that.
Okay. All right. So I made white chocolate ice cream for you to try.
Ooh.
And ice cream is super easy to make. It's if you have an ice cream makers come in different shapes and sizes. Some of them you have to put this unit into the freezer, this insulated thing, and keep it in overnight.
Yeah.
Some of them you just plug in, and some use this brine, this like salt water and ice brine. I went from that. Now I just plug mine in, put the base in. The base has to be super cold, and it just...
Listen to that. Now, that's good radio. Sound of a zipper. There we go.
Sound of a zipper where my cooler is. All right, so here we go. Let's hope it stood the test of time.
Look at that. That's beautiful. Now, what's the overrun on this?
Look at you talking about overrun, smarty pants.
Well, you know, I've learned about three things in the 9 years I've done this show, and that's one of them.
Well, overrun is just the amount of air that is... put into the ice cream as it churns and freezes. And it's known as a churn frozen dessert, as opposed to a still frozen dessert, like a semifreddo.
Okay.
Something like that. And you can make all these hacks with sweetened condensed milk and whipped cream. But this is the real thing. You make a custard on the stove with egg yolks usually. The more egg yolks, the richer it is. And then you leave it in the refrigerator overnight to chill that base and get all the flavors to intermingle.
Yeah.
And how about a striped cone?
Oh, my
cone?
God. That is the most beautiful
pretty?
Cone. And I never thought about cones. Either you get the sugar cones or you get the other kind of puffy cones. You buy them in a bag.
This is super easy to do. And these are known as tuiles, or in French, tuile, which is French for roof tile.
Oh.
And it's a very thin wafer cookie. You can see how thin it is.
Yeah.
When it's hot and it bakes, it's super malleable. So you can shape it in any way you want. I just put it over a cone shape. You can make that with heavy duty foil, or you can just buy a cone shape.
Yeah.
And then you roll it. It's a little hot in the beginning, and there's a little bit of a hole sometimes in the bottom.
Oh, it's like a pirate's telescope.
Sort of, but not that bad.
Okay.
And then I just take something to fill the space.
Well, that is genius. So I asked you, why did you bring what looks like
giant chocolate chips and chocolate covered cherries?
Yeah.
You can even use like a fresh raspberry in the bottom just to stuff the bottom. You could even use a mini marshmallow. marshmallow,
right.
Which a lot of people do. I don't know if you like chocolate-covered cherries.
No,
or
chocolate-covered cherries are
you
just
like
fantastic.
That? And you just got to put it in gently because you really don't want it to break.
Yeah.
Actually,
now, why do you have to have a hole in the bottom?
Because you don't have to, but you now some of them you can notice have less of a hole than
right.
others. It depends on how hot your hands get as you're rolling because
yeah.
it's very hot, a hot business. You can also make bowls. You can make spoons. You can actually get molds or stencils online or make your own stencils by carving them out with an X-Acto knife and shape anything you want. So let me get one of these.
That
let me
is
get
a scoop. You know what, gal? This is impressive. And it's great to see Food Friday guests back in the studio. And then you bring this, and it's truly spectacular.
All right.
Now, that's white chocolate ice cream?
White chocolate ice cream with a high-quality white chocolate. All right. Don't drip it all
over
your
mic. Oh,
you
know I will.
There you go.
All right, let me try a little bit.
There you go.
Mmm.
Very, very rich.
Oh, my gosh. It's delicious.
Isn't that good?
It's. You know what? It doesn't hit you over the head with the sweetness. It's
really
good.
It really doesn't. The chocolate's wonderful, and the chocolate's nice and nice and sweet anyway. And use a high-quality white chocolate because you want more cocoa butter,
yeah.
which is the wonderful fat that we love that's silky on the tongue.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You don't want the fake vegetable-shortening white chocolate.
So when you put the white chocolate in this, do you grind it up or you just put the – I mean, how do you prepare it?
You have a hot base. Your hot – custard bait, would you like a napkin?
I have one.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
You sounded like my mom.
Do you have a napkin, little Ray?
And you know what? I say that to my children. Even my 19-year-old son, I say, you know, you might want to try one of these. Here's a napkin.
I say it to my husband all the time. Take a napkin. Take two napkins. So ice cream, like I said, is a custard.
Yeah.
And you want to add, if you're going to make a chocolate, you want that chocolate to fully melt. So when that custard is nice and hot,
yeah.
that's when you put your finely chopped chocolate. The more finely chopped it is, the quicker it'll melt. And then I always put it through a sieve because that'll get any little bit. So when you're cooking your custard, sometimes a little egg yolk will coagulate a little
right.
bit. It happens.
Yeah.
And you put it through so you get the smoothest ice cream possible. That's the key.
Wow, this is really amazing stuff. Gail Sokol joins us. We talk ice cream and baking. If you have a question about either or, and she is a regular guest on this program, and you know she is a real expert on baking, and I didn't realize it, but ice cream as well. Now, could you take some crumbled bacon and put it down at the bottom of the cone, like a nice piece of bacon?
Ray, I cannot see why not.
Let's try that on the next.
Right. Okay, we'll do it next.
I have one email here, and then we'll take a break, and
okay.
then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Christine wrote in yesterday, and Christine said, I already know it's going to be a great show. Well, I think that's overly optimistic in advance, but, you know.
Thanks a lot.
So far, so good. My question for Gail, do you recommend any substitute for the real deal for those of us on a non-dairy regimen?
You can make ice cream with a lower fat milk instead of heavy cream. I usually use half heavy cream, half whole milk. I have done it with skim milk. I have done it with different types of milk, like a lactate or lactose-free milk.
Yeah.
You could try an oat milk. It may have a different consistency. It may be a little icier because there's more water-based items in those ingredients. You just can't help it. A little cream, a little richness goes a long way, but you can also get some emulsifying agents or add a little flour,
yeah.
which is what I do to some of my custard. So if you make a custard with, let's say, oat milk or soy milk, if you add a little flour, almost like you're making a bechamel sauce, like
yeah.
a sauce,
mm-hmm.
you'll actually get that smooth emulsified feeling. And then when you freeze it, you let it cool. And when you freeze it, you might get that smoothness.
But I mean, and I understand people who can't tolerate dairy and vegans
yes.
and whatnot. But you know, you're about my age. Do you remember that trend in the 70s when it was ice milk?
Yes.
That was not a good trend.
Yeah. Well, it's very watery because any type of water is going to freeze very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's going to cause a giant ice crystal versus something like a teeny, teeny ice crystal when you have mostly fats. Fats will actually coat those ice crystals and prevent them from forming.
Yeah.
And the richer your base, the fewer ice crystals. And also, the faster you freeze your ice cream, okay, like your overrun, you really want to make sure that you don't freeze it too slowly. It should start freezing the minute it hits that ice cream machine. And as it starts going, you want to start freezing immediately. Tiny crystals make smoothness on the tongue.
Very interesting. Gail Sokol joins us today. We'll take a break and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Food Friday, sweet things ahead. We'll be back. Rule number 700 in the radio rule book. Don't try to eat an ice cream cone while you're doing a talk show. But I've managed to, I'm covered in ice cream, but it's really, really good stuff. Gail Sokol is here. That cone, and I'm never going to get to the end of the entire ice cream cone, but I broke off a piece of this beautiful cone, and it is one of the tastiest that you could eat it by itself.
Absolutely. Don't you remember as a kid, I used to take the tiny little bottom of the cone and break it off, and then just sort of drag it through my ice cream on the top and make a mini ice cream cone and just pop it in my mouth. And then I regretted it because 10 minutes later, everything started oozing out of the hole that I formed.
Well, the ice cream is just super rich.
Thank you.
And delicious.
It's very, very, it's very, very luxurious and silky on the tongue.
Indeed it is. Now, really, anything is fair game here if you have a question for Chef Gail Sokol. And we'll go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Nikki and Shushan. Nikki, you're on. Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Great. I have kind of an odd question, I think. I've been having this problem with baking lately. I'm into the Bread Bible, which is a really great cookbook I've enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
And at first, over the winter, everything was great. My breads were coming out amazing. And focaccia. I made focaccia the first time. It came out great. Every time I've had to make it since then, it's soupy, like the water. And other breads seem a little soupy too, but they're more forgiving. But the focaccia is just like, I can't figure out. I know my water didn't get wetter, so I'm really stumped.
Okay, so Nikki, you're saying your dough is very, very loose. Yes?
Correct.
Okay. So that means you're measuring maybe off. So you may not be putting enough flour in. Is something changing with the flour?
Well, that was kind of what I was worried about, you know, and I try to use a scale to measure everything to keep the weights where they're supposed to be. So I try to measure very carefully. And I even bought new flour because I thought, well, gee, maybe my flour went bad. So could it be my scale, like, got bumped or something? I'm almost starting to think my scale went wonky.
Are you zeroing your scale?
Are
you zeroing your scale? So when you put your bowl on, zero it, tear it, you know, so that it takes into consideration the weight of the bowl. And then add your flour at that point and make sure you're adding enough. And you know what? Sometimes it depends on the recipe, but sometimes I have gone beyond the recipe and said, you know what? This is a little soupy or a little loose. I'm going to add more flour. Recipe be damned, and I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And you sometimes have to add a little more to make up for it. So if you find this happening, it could also be sometimes flour is drier one day. If it's raining and super humid, it can be wetter one day, and it can change the amount that you may need. So if something's soupy, it means you need more flour.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Okay, and
in other words,
about adding the flour.
But if it's soupy, all you need to do is, if it's like really loose, like pourable, you want to add maybe a quarter a cup to a half a cup at a time and put your dough hook in your mixer if you're mixing it like that. And then once it starts coming together, pour it out onto a work surface and put your hands in it and take a dough scraper and flip it over on itself until it comes together and keep throwing a little bit of flour over it until it actually forms a dough. Don't get it too dry, but you'll know when it's right because you'll feel it, and it'll feel like the focaccia dough that you made in the past.
So, Nikki, I have a question for you.
That's awesome.
I have a question for you. So, in the old days, you're in the same location, and it came out great, and now it's a little soupier, right? Could it be that... Now, Gail brought up a point about humidity and weather conditions and things like that. Could it be that it's just coincidence that you've tried to make it on days where it's not the right weather conditions and from when you were doing it in the old days?
Yes, I was wondering if that was possible, and it sounds like that's something I need to keep in mind when I'm doing this. So that was really helpful to hear.
And and just make sure that you're tearing the weight of your scale. You know what I'm saying? So if you put it on, you zero it so that you don't take into consideration the bowl, because then you will be adding less flour than you need. So that might be the only thing you're doing wrong.
I do. Oh, no, I'm pretty diligent about the tear, so that
okay.
I got.
Okay. All right, good. So, you know, see if on a more humid day and your flour's a little bit, you know, absorbing a little more moisture, you may need a little more flour.
Well, Nikki, thanks for the call. It's Food Friday today with Chef Gail Sokol. 800-348-2551 is our number. By the way, how are the videos going?
They're going great. They're going great. I'm doing 1 to 2 a week, and it's keeping me quite busy, and I just love it. Love it.
All right, and so that's a thing that really, you began it before the pandemic, and then you hit your stride in the pandemic.
Exactly. I began it a few years ago, and then during the pandemic, I started doing live Facebook baking sessions, and then I just started doing videos, and I got such a big following, and it was, I've heard from people from Algeria. Just last week, somebody from Algeria.
Cool.
So that is really cool.
All right, back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551 is our number. If you have a question for Chef Gail Sokol, and Barbara's in Albany. Barbara, you're on.
Hi there. This question segues very nicely from the previous caller's question. I have been measuring my ingredients using weight for years, and it feels like that's become kind of trendy recently. And the measure that I have been using comes from Rose Levy Birnbaum. But these days, the newer recipes that I come across have much different weights for how much, let's say, a cup of flour should be. So if the idea is to use weight because it's more consistent, then how do I account for having different weights from different recipes of how much what I thought was a standard?
Okay, so Barbara, a recipe is a formula. Okay, and you have to follow the formula in order to get the final baked good and in order to get it the way you want it. Whoever wrote that recipe balanced that formula, you know, solids, liquids, things like that, drying ingredients, moist ingredients, and each flour weighs a different amount per cup. So all-purpose flour per cup might be 4 ounces, 4.4 ounces, and then whole wheat flour, if you get a cup of that, that's going to weigh a different amount. So you have to follow the exact recipe. So I'm not quite sure, you know, what you're getting at other than follow the recipe for what, you know, don't go by what you know. Go by what the recipe is saying for you to use, because you're assuming that that recipe that you're following is balanced and that recipe writer or creator actually knew what they were doing when they did that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, so my question is, in one recipe, it says that 4 cups of flour is, let's say, 408 grams. And in another recipe, it's closer to 460 grams. So if it says 4 cups, and then it also includes the amount of grams, but it's different in two different sources, that's what I'm asking about.
Right. And I agree with you. Sometimes weighing, there is a discrepancy as well. When I was writing my textbook, I had the same issue. Whether, you know, they always say weighing is more accurate than volume, and yet there still can be some discrepancy in weight. And if you look at conversions in, let's say, on the internet versus, you know, what Rose Levy Birnbaum writes, there will be discrepancies. You're going to see differences because it depends on what digital scale they use, even though they should all, in a you know, wonderful world, a Barbie world where everything is, you know, just wonderful with Ken and Barbie. It doesn't always work out that way. And sometimes there are discrepancies and you just have to go with it and feel your dough if you're making bread and feel and just get a sense of what it should be. So do you have any specific recipes that it didn't work out for, or you're just talking about a few grams between the two recipes?
Well, it's not when I use my tried and true recipes, I know that a cup of flour is 145 grams. But when I've been looking recently at newer things, sometimes it's 120 grams, sometimes it's 127 grams. Am I using different all-purpose flour, or are other people?
That
the scales are calibrated differently.
That is a very good possibility. There are discrepancies, and people thought, oh, wow, you just go to, you know, a baking scale and it's perfect, and it doesn't always work out like that. I thought all my problems would be solved if I just use a scale, and it doesn't work out. So go by what that specific recipe says, and if you feel like you need a little bit more, add a little more. But again, if it's you're comparing apples and apples, all purpose with all purpose, it should be the same. But again, depends on where this recipe was written, and what their scale is. Sometimes they do have a slight variation. And I will tell you, grams and metric, they round. You know what I mean by rounding up? You know, when you were in school and if it was like 0.5 or above, you rounded up 0.3.
Yeah.
Well, they round. There's a lot of rounding going on there, Barbara. So what they rounded out may be different than what you're used to from another recipe. It's just something that's going to happen.
All right, Barbara.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Good luck. Good luck.
800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Chef Gail Sokol is our guest. Baking, obviously, on the table today. Ice cream making on the table today. Any question, if you'd like to stump Gail Sokol, give us a call. 800-348-2551. What's in the most recent video?
The most recent video is a tiramisu.
Oh.
That I put Kahlua in, and I make my own ladyfingers.
Yeah.
And I guess not everyone makes their own ladyfingers. I thought, like, wow, doesn't everyone make their own ladyfingers?
Are they easy to make?
They're really easy to make.
But
yeah.
That's for you. What about for the average person?
Yes, anybody can make these. I have done baking classes and made ladyfingers with 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
So it is an easy thing to do. It's an egg foam cookie. So you need your egg whites and you need your yolks, and then you fold your meringue in, your egg whites and sugar mixture into your yolk mixture, and then you pipe it out. You make like 4-inch long lengths on a sheet pan covered with parchment paper, and you just follow the lines. You can even use a Ziploc bag with a hole cut in the corner of it. And you bake them, and it's super easy, and they're so good.
You know, you bring up a memory from 40-plus years ago. Back in the day, we would often have ladyfingers with ice cream on the top.
Yeah, absolutely. You could use ladyfingers for anything. And some ladyfingers on the market tend to be firm. You know, like Saviorti cookies, that type of cookie can be very hard. So you need to soak them more. But the ladyfingers I make and some typical French ladyfingers can be very, very, like the type Julia Child used to make.
Yeah.
Are very delicate. And they're spongy. So they're a sponge cake cookie, and they're wonderful. They can be served with anything. Ice cream, you can break them up and put whipped cream over them and fruit. A lot of different stuff you can do with it.
When did little shaver Gail Sokol know that she was going to do this?
I think it was determined before I was born, Ray.
Really?
Yes. I came out, and I was like, I love to bake. Anything that was on TV that had to do with baking— Julia Child was my idol. I wrote to her, and she wrote me back.
Oh, that's neat.
I have a few letters from her. Believe it or not, my mother, I love you, Mom. Remember that. I love you. She could not bake at all. She made a pie once. I think I was 10. Used the entire McCormick cinnamon box.
Well, that's a lot.
A lot of cinnamon for the amount of apples we used. Yes. Anyway, so I just took over. I loved it so much. So whenever she got a cookbook as a gift, I sort of borrowed it forever. and that was just my thing. I knew I wanted to do it. It was ingrained in me.
You know, you've read probably, 1,000 cookbooks,
oh, yeah,
and you probably own quite a few.
Yes.
When you were writing yours, how did you go about sort of parsing the recipes? And it must be quite a process.
It is a process. It took me over 3 years to write my textbook and about 2 years to write my book for home chefs, Baking with Success. So you basically start with the basics. What does a typical baker want to know? And I had taught for so many years before I wrote my book that I had, you know, access to other textbooks as well. So you want to make a good bread. You want to start with yeast breads. You want to understand what yeast is and the role of fermentation. And I'm sort of a science person.
Yeah.
So I have a sort of a chemistry background in my college years. So I basically love to tie together why the ingredients interact with the others so that you get your final baked good. And if you don't understand what's happening. My grandmother was a fabulous baker and cook. She might not have understood why she was mixing certain things.
Right.
But there was a reason for it. There was a reason why you put baking soda in, and there was an acid in addition to that baking soda because you need to form a neutralization reaction to form carbon dioxide.
So this is why when people call and say, I'm having this and that trouble with baking, you say, follow the recipe. You have a
exactly.
chemistry background.
Yes, follow the recipe. Baking, you don't mess with. So cooking, if you want to add an extra couple of cloves of garlic, or in your case, bacon,
right,
you can do it.
Right.
But when you're baking, you have to substitute like with like. So if you want to substitute, let's say, butter with a little bit of peanut butter, you can do it. Fat and fat, and there's solid fats. That's okay. But if you want to substitute something that is completely, you know, opposite each other, you can't do it. You have to be careful. Like my mother, again, I love you, Mom. She was making gravy once, didn't have any flour, saw a powder in the closet. It
oh
was
God.
Baking powder.
Oh, boy.
And it was an explosive gravy. Just letting you know.
Now, that should be in your next book. Let's go to Martha in Western Massachusetts. Martha, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking the call. I am making some sourdough bread right now. I think like everybody else, I started making my own sourdough at the beginning of the pandemic.
Good for you.
So I think I've got my recipe down. Sourdough bread is fairly, you know, I've gotten fairly good at it, I think. But what I'm doing right now is different. I'm using for the first time some freshly milled flour that I got in Vermont with a date of, May 14th, it says on the packet. So instead of using flour from the, you know, from the grocery store, I'm using this really freshly, you know, a little bit more expensive flour. So I guess my question to you is, what can I expect? What do you think will be different about the sourdough that comes out this afternoon?
It may be a little bit different because flours that once they're milled, they have to age a little bit in order to bring about the optimal gluten-forming proteins in them. And was this a bread flour?
No, it's not a bread flour. It's an all-purpose flour.
It's an all-purpose flour.
Champlain Valley all-purpose flour.
Okay. And do you use bread flour in addition to your all-purpose for your sourdough?
A little bit of wheat flour. I've used. I use a King Arthur sourdough recipe.
Yeah.
And it asks for a little bit of wheat flour.
Okay.
Like 80 grams, I think, or 85 grams.
Okay. You might notice a little bit of a difference. There should be, you know, no major difference, but you may notice a little difference in the rise. Do you have any additional commercial yeast in with your sourdough recipe? Or is it just straight sourdough?
Straight sourdough.
Good.
The same starter that I started last March. His name is Spouchy, by the way.
Oh, no, yes. You have to name your starters,
oh,
Martha.
Come on.
You have to.
Yes.
All right. Yes, I have three, and all of mine have names. So, you know what? I don't think you should see a big difference other than the gluten-forming proteins. I do mine with bread flour.
Okay.
So you might notice that, it may or may not rise as high, depending, because it's freshly milled. You've never made it with freshly milled before, I take it.
No, it's the first time. And, you know, I was reading some articles about, you know, the benefits of freshly milled flour and it'll change your life. And so I thought I would try it.
Try it and see, you know, and see what you get. I wish you the best of luck. You're having your virgin loaf made right now. It's fabulous. Fabulous.
Virgin loaf. On that happy note, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gail Sokol is our guest. It's Food Friday, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gail Sokol is our guest today on the program. And we started out by talking about the beautiful homemade ice cream, white chocolate ice cream she brought, and the fantastic cones that she made from scratch. And now we're into all kinds of things like baking bread and whatnot. And I have this email here from Ellie May in Troy, who writes, could you please share your thoughts on avocado cheesecake? I had one years ago that had lime in it and a substitute crust that was, I believe, made of honey and granola. Do you have a similar recipe?
Oh, God, no.
That is the most repulsive thing.
Well, you know, I don't mean to laugh because I love avocados. I just don't think I'd like them in cheesecake. I have a guilty thing I did. I made avocado brownies and I threw them out. Because
what possessed you, Gail Sokol, a noted chef and an educator, to make avocado brownies?
Because I was a nutrition instructor at one point as well, and I said, you know, it's a healthier fat. Let's take the butter out. Let's try it.
Yeah.
And I tried it, and I regretted it. It was no one in my family would eat it. I tried one little bite, and I said, okay, I don't like to throw things out and waste them.
Yeah.
I had to throw it out.
Well, I mean, failure is a part of baking,
it's a
right?
part of learning.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe she had something that had something else in it that sort of balanced out everything. But avocado as a fat by itself, I personally don't think I would do that. Mm-hmm. I've never done that.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Chef Gail Sokol. And Joseph's in Chicopee. Joseph. Are you there, Joseph?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Okay. I really like my peanut butter, and I use all natural peanut butter with the oil on the top. How can I make peanut butter sauce where I can pour it over vanilla ice cream? And how do I make vanilla ice cream peanut butter swirl?
Joseph, you're a man after my own heart. All right, Gail.
Oh, tell. Yum. That sounds wonderful, Joseph. So the peanut butter ice cream, if you make a typical vanilla ice cream recipe and put it through your ice cream machine, and when your ice cream machine says your ice cream is done, whatever type, you know, of machine you have, take your ice cream out of the container, put it into a bowl, and gently microwave a little peanut butter so that it is more liquefied and not hot. Not hot. Let it cool down a little. And you can either pour your ice cream into, let's say, a 9x5x3 inch loaf pan and then just put some swirly peanut butter through it. That would be awesome. And then freeze it. Okay, that's your
really
ice cream.
Good.
All right. Your peanut butter sauce, have you ever made peanut butter sauce?
No, I don't.
Okay, so
I'd like to know the recipe.
Okay, I don't have a recipe for peanut butter sauce, but I have some thoughts. So take some peanut butter, and again, put it into a microwavable cup or bowl. Microwave it on, you know, like seconds at a time, and then so it liquefies. And if you wanted to add a little like coconut sugar or a little brown sugar, just to give a little nuttiness to sort of balance that peanut butter, and then drizzle away all over your ice cream, that would be amazing. I wouldn't do anything else to really, you know, do anything to that peanut butter flavor.
Mm. Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So I think you're there, Joseph. You can do this.
All right. Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Gail Sokol is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number on this Food Friday. Uh-oh. Shannon in Worthington is going to let me have it. Uh-oh. Shannon, go ahead.
Hi there. So I just talking about the avocado cheesecake.
Oh, yeah.
A recipe, a dessert that I've made before. It's actually vegan and raw. And avocado is a component in it, but cashews, raw soaked cashews, are actually making up. It makes like a cheesecake kind of a texture, but it's not a cheesecake.
Yep. And you know what? Go ahead, Shannon.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just thinking perhaps that's what the caller was talking about rather than cooking, having a cooked cheesecake.
That's a possibility because that sounds a lot more palatable to me. I've done things with cashews where you actually can cook them. You sort of boil them a little bit and then puree them, and they make the creamiest sauce over pastas. You can probably use it as a base for a cheesecake. I've also done things with tofu. You can silken tofu. Now, Ray is giving me the bacon, but you can.
When tofu is done properly, it's just fine.
It's
wonderful. I have no problem.
And you can even mix, I don't know if you've ever done this, Shannon, but you can actually take tofu, pureed, or even your cashew cream, because that's what they call it, cashew cream. And Shannon would know this.
Okay.
And
how do you know that Shannon would know this?
I'm assuming if she is a...
You're giving Shannon a lot of credit.
If she is an educated gal on this on this cashew cream. And you could even mix in some melted chocolate, and that would make an amazing cheesecake as well. So yes, the former caller was forgetting that premium ingredient, which is cashew, and that really would make a big difference. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And as an alternative crust, as like a gluten-free crust, I've had it with like dates and nuts, and kind of gets pressed into a springform pan, and it creates like I have had it as almost like a key lime pie, but with cashews. Anyway, totally different thing, but it actually is really, really good.
Well, I believe you. I believe you, Shannon. And yours, I would try. That sounds amazing. It really does. It really does.
Well, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
See ya. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Gail Sokol joins us. We were talking about failure and how that is a part of learning almost anything.
Yes.
When you wrote your cookbook, Baking with Success, over probably a year or two, right?
A couple of years.
The textbook took 3. This took...
Yes.
Now, it's been several years since you've written that, right?
Yes.
Have you ever looked back and said, oh, I should have done this differently? I should have put this in here differently.
Well, you know... Yeah. There's a few recipes that I said, I might have tweaked that a little bit differently. But you know what? That's the tincture of time. You go through time and you learn things. You become a different person. You like things a little bit differently. And you have read thoughts change and your tastes change. So
I mean, the textbook, I assume it's like to some extent like science. Things change very slowly. And so I assume that most of the things in the textbook are still very much state of the art.
Oh, yeah. An egg is always an egg. baking powder will always react when you add heat and moisture. Yeah, I mean, things are not going to change. It's not like, this is a evolving science. This is something that's pretty standard and steady, and it's going to be like this in 100 years. That's why we look at cookbooks from hundreds of years ago. And I went to Mount Vernon in Washington, and I had the cornbread that George Washington ate, and I got the recipe.
How was it?
And it was okay. It was okay. But you know what? I like mine better, but it was good. It was good. But, you know, that's what they had in those days. It was probably a harder, more rustic cornmeal.
Well, he had wooden
meal.
Teeth. So, I mean, he could easily chew most hard things.
Well, that's a possibility. Maybe he got the wooden teeth because of the cornbread. You never know.
Chef Gail Sokol joins us today. By the way, if people want to find you online and hook up with some of your YouTube baking videos, how do they do that?
They can go to my website, chefgailsokol.com, or YouTube, my YouTube channel.
And you've been teaching classes? I know that we have talked about with many of the people that come on the show and who have come on via the telephone, and many of them said, yeah, I'm teaching classes via Zoom and whatnot.
I have taught some corporate events via Zoom through, over Washington and England. And so I've been doing that, mostly things from home. But I basically do my YouTube videos, and I've gotten a lot of positive response from it.
The reason I ask is, what have you learned from some of your students in far-flung areas?
Well, I always assume people are going to be more organized than they are sometimes. I mean, I know I am, like, organized to a fault.
Really?
Are you questioning that?
Well, No. And certainly, I don't want to cause any trouble.
No. But I'm saying they knew I was doing a corporate event. They knew this was going to happen. They had their ingredients. They had the recipe ahead. And people were still scrambling as we were trying to get it all together. It was a lot of people.
Yeah.
So if you have 25 people following you on Zoom, you want to make sure. So we waited. I was very patient. And there's not a problem. And I had so much fun. But, people need to sometimes get a little more organized with their mise en place, getting everything in its place. Measure out your flour ahead. Measure out your ingredients, your dry ingredients. Get them together. Depending on the mixing method, if it's the creaming method, make sure your butter's at room temperature. Make sure your eggs come out of the refrigerator. Don't crack your eggs directly in the electric mixer as it's whirling around, because you're going to end up with crunchies.
Really?
Shell. Yeah. Do you do that?
Maybe. These are beginners. Don't you expect a certain level of discombobulation?
Yes. And yet some people will say to me, I bake all the time. And I'm like, okay, that's nice. I don't know if that's true. But
you're a tough taskmaster, aren't you? Do people come out crying after these?
I've had a few, but I'm usually pretty patient. No, I've had more people like it than like my teaching than not. Honest.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Chef Gail Sokol joins us. Jeanette in Belchertown. Hello, Jeanette.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. One, are there any secrets to making your own vanilla extract?
It's so expensive to buy.
Yeah,
my God.
Yeah, it is. It's expensive to. I don't. I have not made my own vanilla extract. I do purchase mine. Have you ever made your own?
No, but our son has, and he was not impressed with the product. So, I know that it takes a long time, and he had it stored down in his basement, waiting for it to come around. I do most of the baking in the family. So anyway, we have a lot of adults who are bakers and cooks. And so we sort of share secrets around the family from, Connecticut to New York to Europe.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if.
No, I have never made my own vanilla extract, and I probably won't. I'll make my own lady fingers, but I just don't see the benefit of it if I like the product on the market. I only recommend pure vanilla extract though, and not the fake stuff.
What is the fake stuff?
Right. When we lived in Colorado, one of my neighbors gave me some of her Mexican vanilla.
Oh, that sounds good.
Extract.
Yeah, I bet it was delicious.
Oh, it was. Yes.
Yes.
Wow, that's vanilla.
Yeah.
The other question is, what are the advantages of sourdough over yeast when you're making bread?
Okay, so have you ever made sourdough versus other yeast breads?
No, I always use yeast. My husband always uses yeast, but we really don't like the flavor of the sourdough. But are there any health advantages or time advantages to using sourdough over yeast?
Well, sourdoughs you can actually maintain over years. I have three sourdoughs that are over 22, 23 years old, some of them. Bubbles is, I think, 23 years
Bubbles.
Old.
Bubbles. And what are the other two names? I meant to ask this. What are the other two?
Fräulein Brecht, which in German means Miss Vomit.
That's very nice.
And the other
Thank
one
you.
Is the Yeastinator.
The Yeastinator.
The Yeastinator.
Beautiful.
The Yeastinator. So You get it. You get a different flavor. So you probably just don't like the sour tang of a sourdough, Jeanette. And some people don't. But a sourdough, you don't throw out. You maintain some of that sourdough. You take some of it and you bake with it, and then you keep some of it and put it in your fridge.
I realize that, but that is something separate from making bread and eating it. You know, you have to do this other stuff, and you know. So I was just wondering, what was the advantage of it?
It's really not. It's a personal preference. Some sourdoughs start with commercial yeast. My sourdoughs are natural. I actually took grapes, wrapped them in cheesecloth, and then put them in water and flour and left them for about 14 days to make all sorts of different reactions, and started baking with them. And that's how I started. So I have no commercial yeast in mine. Yeast breads use commercial yeast. So it depends on your flavor profile and what you like.
Jeanette, thanks for the call. Let's quickly go to Schenectady. And Susan, you're on.
Thank you. I was wondering what I need to look out for if I'm trying to convert a torte into cupcakes.
Okay,
I'm sorry, I don't have the recipe with me, but
what type of torte is it? When you say a torte is usually like a layered cake with different fillings.
It's not a layer cake. It's a pumpkin torte. It was a recipe out of New York Times, so it's one layer. They suggested a 27-inch springform pan, and then it had a whipped cream frosting.
Okay, what size springform pan?
It has a pumpkin puree in it.
Okay, so it's like a cake, right? A one-layer cake?
It is like a one-layer cake,
okay,
yeah.
So
it's not exactly a cake, I guess, because it's called a torte.
I know, torte and cake, sometimes it's a little bit of semantics, depending on what. Because a true torte usually has layers, and you soak each layer with a sugar syrup and all that, and buttercream. But torts, you know, vary. It depends on what it is. I would take, if it's a 9-inch springform pan, I would try to fill your cupcakes, put, cupcake liners in, or spray them with nonstick cooking spray, and experiment and see how many cupcakes you can make. You may be able to get 12, depending on what your torte recipe is, since I don't know. And you'd have to see how much standard cupcakes you can make. And then adjust the time. If this torte is one layer, you know, small layer, the recipe to bake them might be about the same.
All right, that's where we will have to leave it, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for the call, Susan. Gail Sokol, you are a lot of fun. You do scare me at times. I think you're very, very fastidious in the kitchen, but I think you're a great guest, and it's great to have you here. Once again, how do people find you online?
ChefGailSokol.com is my website, and they can go to my YouTube channel, Chef Gail Sokol.
You know, you would not want to have me on one of your classes.
Oh, probably not.
I would be one of those people who'd be crying at the end.
No, you wouldn't.
I wouldn't even know how to get a cup.
I would be nice.
Would you? I'm sure
I would
you would.
I would be nice.
But I wouldn't be. I'd be incompetent. That would be the problem.
No. I don't believe anyone is incompetent.
Really?
No. No, very few people are incompetent.
Ooh, in the kitchen, I'm pretty close. All right, we'll have to see. We'll pick this up again because we want to have
Sounds
you come
good.
Back very soon.
I'd love it.
Thanks to Gail Sokol for being here. Support comes from Warren Kitchen on Cutlery, a Rhinebeck Kitchenware Emporium for over 20 years. Cutlery, cookware, bakeware, kitchen tools for those who live to cook and entertain. Warren Kitchen on Cutlery.com. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, Massachusetts, offering landscape and design services, including installation of trees, shrubs, sod, and lawn, stone walls, patios, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Riverfront Park, now with live music, TroyMarket.org. At Taste New York at Todd Hill, a market offering New York-made food and beverages 10 miles north of Route 84 on the Taconic State Parkway. Taste New York, Todd Hill on Facebook. Once again, thanks to Chef Gail for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer, and Barb King took the calls. Our producers, Jackie Orchard, I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2:00.